So even for someone who doesn't sort of love nature, the fact that there isn't building and city and town within view, and not even like just over the hill, it's just forest. And so it gives some space for us to, even if we don't go far from this hall, to have a sense of spreading out on earth, of being less sort of trapped in ourselves. So it's a different way of discovery. And partly also the way that we came to be here and how we are able to be here again for the first time this year since 3 years ago. Is just an example of how the impossible sometimes happens. So we didn't know this place was here, this place that's perfect for our retreat. And a Catholic nun who came on a Buddhist meditation retreat in Bodh Gaya happened to hear that I was looking for a place, for a center. She happened to mention that to a Catholic bishop, Indian Catholic bishop, who for some reason was willing to drive Gemma and me with his personal driver, us sitting in the back of the car, to different places that might be possible. And as we came down the driveway of this place 10 and a half years ago, not, of course we had no words, but we both knew that it was the perfect place without even seeing the place, just the length of the driveway. It's funny because this is not a Catholic ashram, it's a Protestant Methodist ashram, and they do care about these things. But the Catholic bishop introduced us, and somehow that was enough to start. And so we have the chance on this retreat, it's the first time that we're doing a silent, deep rest meditation retreat with Jinshin Jitsu, more woven in than usual. It's often woven in a really simple way, like hold your fingers sometimes, or notice where your hands are, or breathe out. And some of you are really worried that there's going to be too much Jinshin, and some of you are maybe excited to learn a lot of Jinshin. And I'm going to disappoint both of you. And I'm going to be actively disappointing you the whole 2 weeks. And it's because what Jinshin Jitsu is, really, so it's in the name, which I'll talk about, and remind me if I forget. It is that place where what seems impossible sometimes happens by itself. And as we get more and more into that, what is it that I am? I don't even know what I am. That already seems impossible. How can I be such and such, however many years old, and not know what I am? But I don't. How can I bear to admit that to myself? But I do. And by admitting that I have no idea what I am, no idea, the whole bottom opens out. And that's called beginner's mind. And that's what Jinshin Jitsu has to do with. So a lot of the teachers who professionally go around and teach courses, which are already all over the world, so you can go to them if you want more information and more note-taking, which you're not going to have here. That's already on offer. But those teachers also say that what they love about it is that they're continually more and more beginner. And that also sounds like a nice thing to say, like to be sort of modest and humble. But it's actually how it is. And so just the example of feeling, do I know what a human being is, and do I know who I am? and if it's possible to feel that you don't. And then what that brings you, what that not knowing brings. What kind of space, what kind of energy, what kind of movement, what happens? And so in the name we have that question, because the first word, jinn, is human being, person. So it's about human being, whatever that is. And then shin is, it can be translated as heart. What is that? So we usually think heart, and we might see an image of a little heart, or we might think of the emotional life. We might think of being deeply touched or moved, maybe by the sounds of the wind in the trees or something like that. And we also might feel just a kind of a wind that moves through you that isn't a wind. So all of that maybe, and maybe more, might be what heart is, because the word shin in Japanese can also mean spirit. And then again, what is that? More and more myself, if I start to say the word spiritual life or path or spirituality, I almost can't get myself to say it, because I don't know what it is. I don't know what the difference between spiritual life is and life. And I don't think there's necessarily a difference. And I think that making the difference can be a problem also. For both someone who thinks I'm spiritual and someone who thinks I'm not spiritual. Or the moments that I think I'm spiritual and the moments I think I'm not spiritual. I think it may be more a problem. But then spirit, what else? Can we go anywhere with the word? Or do we just have to put it into the fire or what? One way is through the English word, which is a little tricky because it's translated from a Japanese word, but spirit having to do with breath or something that's invisible, but has some kind of particular quality and power that we can draw on. Yeah? Does that make sense? How is it for you with English? Because I really welcome you to ask questions. And if you have the good luck of knowing that you don't know English, instead of thinking that you do, then you'll really help everyone if you ask, what does that mean? So on the last retreat, there was someone whose first language was not English, and he very kindly and simply and bravely would ask, what does receptivity mean, for example? And it was great, because the next thing in my notes for my talk was, what is receptivity? What does it mean? And he would ask, because he didn't know the English word. So please ask. Or make a sign or a face, which I can't see now, but during the usual talks I will. So it might be something about the human being and something that's invisible, that maybe heart has something to do with being right in the middle of. And also in the Japanese, shin can mean God. So you might have heard of Shintoism, the Shinto religion, which is a religion of spirits and ancestors. So something that doesn't seem to have a regular kind of body, maybe someone who's died, or maybe the spirit of the spring, or the storm, or the lake, or the ashram, or whatever. So we can stay with what is it. We could feel if maybe it means awake, human being awake. Jutsu really means techniques, as far as I understand, techniques. And we can take it as art. So we learn something that's a technique, like where do I put my hands? Or how do I know what is Jinshin Jutsu and what isn't? How do I know what is meditation and what isn't? How do I know what is awake human being and what isn't? Something about technique. But when we mix technique with human being and spirit, heart, God, What happens is called art. What happens is also called, they talk about tuning into a wider harmony. So when what we experience is disharmony, we take it as a quest for a wide enough place that can feel where there is harmony already, that can handle what feels like disharmony in a different way that brings it into harmony, that lets things fall into place. So there's a way that Jinshin Jutsu means the same thing as meditation and the fruit of meditation. There's a way that they mean exactly the same thing. But there's also a way that Jinshin Jutsu goes especially well with meditation through deep rest, because it's partly feeling for what's already, where's the harmony already, no matter how much disharmony seems to be going on. And maybe if I give a couple of techniques that are the most simple and central, can give a flavor for meditation and for Jinshin Jutsu. So one is called being the exhale. And I used to not like how they had these kind of weird sounding word sayings, being the exhale, be the exhale. It sounds, to me, uncomfortably new age, be the exhale. But somehow, because I think it's not quite new age, it's more like someone who was a Japanese woman who came to live in the United States, and actually English wasn't her first language. And so it's more like it's actually awkward. And the awkwardness gives us a little bit of room to know that we don't know exactly what we're talking about. And we never will, because it's never the end of the story of human being, heart, spirit, God, play, awake. The harmony seems to always go wider. So just when we got comfortable with how good we are at finding the harmony, even with the leopards and the thunder and being tired or whatever you are today, the bottom drops out and we get to begin. We begin to not know. And human being gets bigger, heart gets bigger, God gets bigger, spirit gets bigger, and art gets bigger. And so harmony getting wider is not about being comfortable. It is very often uncomfortable. Being at ease in the widening harmony can be uncomfortable. So when we want to think that, oh, I'm going to learn these nice techniques to make me more comfortable, how can we hear the disharmony in that statement and find a wider harmony? So just to play with be the exhale, what it might mean, what it might be. It could be like be the exhale. Like just be and just the exhale. It could be like, be the exhale, like, ugh, all of that crap. Ugh, thank God there's an exhale coming along soon, sometime. And that's a wider, already wider. A wider definition of me. Or playing with being that marvelous thing that we can't quite define, that seems to happen, not in our control. But very suddenly, there's an exhale starting, and then very softly and gradually sometimes, and sometimes deeply and strongly. We never know what kind of quality it's going on. It's happening out of nowhere, and it's gone. To be willing to suddenly be, and to be stretching out in a way that you don't control, and then to be suddenly gone. Like almost gone, and completely gone. Be the exhale. And there's another one that could sound maybe even more New Age. Be the smile. And this, if you could imagine like a soft-spoken, really humble, older Japanese woman who has a deep sense of humor and friendship with life. If you could imagine her saying, so that's not how everyone else would say, her saying, Mary Burmeister, be the smile. Sometimes it might help to even imagine the Japanese accent. That might help. I won't do it, but. So not like making fun or disrespectfully, but that could help feel the not quite new age-ness of Be the Smile. What's meant by Be the Smile, I can be a little more specific too, to feel that sometimes it does happen when we're at rest in our world. That's not only ours. And it doesn't have to be only my world. There's enough sense of being at home and going along with how it doesn't always go how I planned. And maybe from the belly, something starts lifting up, and it's not the shoulders. Something starts lifting up, and it's not the shoulders. But it does actually lift the two edges of the mouth and not the eyes. So it's actually a really specific smile. It's a smile that somehow affects all the cells, but it doesn't move the muscles of the eyes. So usually we think a real smile, we can tell because the eyes are smiling. And when someone's being photographed and the photographer takes a little too long, so the mouth stays smiling and the eyes are like, come on. Hurry up. Then we think, that's not a real smile. Which maybe it isn't, but this other smile is also different. And it does have something to do with emotional content and mental content. So it has something to do with what our thoughts are saying and what our emotions are doing, and not being that interested in what they're doing and what they're saying. Not being that interested in what the thoughts are saying and what the emotions are doing. The smile has something to do with that. The emotions might be doing whatever they want to do. The thoughts might be doing whatever they want to do. It's just not that interesting. And there's some other way that we're moved that comes up. It allows the middle of the mouth to stay down and be in touch, grounded, normal, ordinary, simple, and it allows something else that just lifts up. So you have already two techniques to play with. And I'm smiling as I'm saying that because it's not exactly a technique. It's more a discovery. It's a reminder that you could discover. You could remember a genuine smile of that kind. It doesn't mean that other smiles are not genuine. But you could leave room for that to come back to you. Oh yeah, that time, lying in the sun on the rock or whatever. That was that deep, simple smile. Came up. That was one way of being the out-breath. So maybe I'll just say a couple of practical things about how the Jinshin will probably fit into the retreat. And then I'll finish with one last koan. There's the night watchman. In case you want a glimpse. He's just so, so sweet also. So my plan, which may change, and of course I'll let you know if it does, but my plan is that each day, starting tomorrow, Gemma or I will show you in the instructions time, so that's the meditation after breakfast, we'll show you a place to put your right hand and a place to put your left hand on your body. And so if you're not into the Jinshin, you don't do it. You don't listen to that little thing. And if you're into doing the Jinshin, you can do that during that meditation or not. You have all day to play with that hand position, to feel into what it's about. Sometimes we might tell you the name of it, sometimes we might not. So then at the end, maybe there'll be a summary of what it all is or something like that. But the main point is to have the chance to experience what happens when you put your hand somewhere. And then some days there'll be other ways of tuning into that energy, which you may or may not be told this is a way to tune into that stomach energy thing or whatever. But it's going to be each day a different organ. So it's energy that's related to an organ. It's not that much about the organ. What it technically is called is the energy that, let's say, takes care of a whole range of things, physical and invisible, mental, emotional, physical, as well as spiritual, let's say. That has something to do with that physical structure that has the same name, called stomach, for example, or liver. And we may sometimes also tune in to that physical structure and feel how the strange way that those cells take that particular location and shape in relation to all the other locations and shapes in the body, how that in and of itself has a certain quality already by itself, and that has something to say to the Jinshin Jutsu practice of that technique of putting those two hands there. Every other evening after dinner, before the last meditation of the day, we'll also do some exploration that has to do with the Jinshin, sometimes with music and movement. And if you're not into doing the movement, you could still come and not do the movement. We'll see how it goes. Probably every other day or so, when I give the instructions in the morning in the meditation after breakfast, I will probably incorporate things that relate to the organ of the day. But I probably won't be telling you that very much. It'll just be that the meditation is like that. And you'll have the chance to not think, oh, that must be the stomach because da 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 da, but just to go into the meditation and experience from the inside what that energy quality is, also collectively, generally, and also in your own character makeup, where sometimes a particular quality is more dominant or more regressive, more in the background. And sometimes it's uncomfortable to be in touch with that organ quality. In either case, if it's on too much or it's off too much, then it may be uncomfortable. And so not to be surprised, but we're not here only to be comfortable. So do any questions come up yet about anything? So just to get a sense of the retreat of meditation through deep rest and Jinshin Jutsu, I want to just tell a koan. So again, from the East Asian spiritual tradition, in this case, there were two Zen masters. And in this case, this is a conversation between two Zen masters. It wasn't like a teacher and a student. So Yun Yan, who lived from 780 to 841 of the Common Era, and Dao Wu, who lived from 761 to 835. So obviously they had a conversation, they lived at the same time. And this was the Tang Dynasty, which was a certain kind of flowering. So in this case, Yun Yan, who is the younger one, asked Dao Wu, how does Kuan Yin, who is the female bodhisattva of compassion, how does Kuan Yin use those many hands and eyes? So you might have seen statues of Kuan Yin in her female form, or Avalokiteshvara Chenrezig in the male form, which is more common in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, with a kind of aura of hands. And often there's a hand, an eye in the palm of each hand as well. And so she has, or he has, 1,000 hands and eyes. So the younger Zen master asks the older Zen master, how does Kuan Yin use those many hands and eyes? Dao Wu answered, it's like someone in the middle of the night reaching behind her head for a pillow.
For what?
For a pillow. So it's the kind of movement that would happen when we're asleep in the middle of the night. We're either half asleep or completely asleep. And the body just by itself moves. So here we have again the word comfortable. It does something to make things more comfortable. There's a kind of spontaneous, unthought out movement, action of kindness, let's say. So apparently Yun Yan didn't quite get it, and so pressed to explain his understanding, Dao Wu said something that's even harder to understand. All over the body, all over the body are hands and eyes. So for us, the question is even more, has another dimension, because we're talking about trying to understand an image that's not, for probably all of us, maybe some of you grew up with Kuan Yin images, but most of us did not grow up around images of bodhisattvas with 1,000 hands and eyes. And so then the question becomes a little bit different. Why would someone make an image like that? Why would someone express the human being experience in that form? Or what is that shape? What is that shape that someone experienced and then made an image of? And the first answer, it's like someone in the middle of the night reaching behind her head for a pillow. So I love that the bodhisattva of compassion in this image is reaching for a pillow for herself. And what that partly means is sometimes we're too caught up about being our selfishness, and that we think our selfishness is equal to ego, when so often it's our neglect and negation of ourselves, are so easily feeling rejected and not enough, that is how the ego is active and how the selfishness happens, the problematic selfishness. So this is a completely unproblematic selfishness. And it partly helps us be open and aware and awake to the experience that reaching for a pillow for myself in the middle of the night without thinking about it, the natural kind action, the definition of who I am is not just this body, but that natural kind action could just as easily put the pillow under your head. Under the leopard's head or whatever. So all over the body are hands and eyes. We have to wonder what body, which body. So this body, yes, and also where does the body end? And where are not eyes and hands? To get a little bit into this, one way in would just be to play with feeling just as if you had one more pair of eyes, so just two more eyes instead of 1,000, as if you had two more eyes in the back of your head. How does that, if you just close your front eyes, let the front eyes rest. They're usually a bit dominant. And open your back eyes. Just pretend, imagine, what if you had eyes in the back of you? How does that change your experience of your body and of your world and of yourself? How does that wake up sensitivity in the back and allow the front to rest? The guard to come down in the front. So we will be playing with putting our hands here and there and waking up, opening up brightness and vision all over the place. Call it what you will. We have time for supper, and maybe since we're running behind, we just simply start the meditation at 8 instead of 7:45.
Yeah, and the 5 person who just arrived, like, I will meet you during that time.
Yeah.
7:45 or 8 o'clock in the dining hall, to show you your room and go out. Yes.
So if possible, if you're of the 5 who just came, to try to meet Jonathan at 7:45 so you have enough time for everything. To meet by the board or where?
Yeah, we meet by the board.
And everyone else will just meet here in just under an hour, and we'll just do a half an hour meditation from 8 to 8:30 in case you're tired from traveling today or whatever. Or if you've been on retreat and you're tired from talking for 24 hours. And just to say, even if there's tiredness, it is a deep rest retreat, and so you will have plenty of time to rest. And just a real encouragement not to leave Katoriji alone tomorrow at 6:30. Come, let the light that is there in the morning at that time wake you up and bring you to the hall for the yoga and meditation if you feel inspired, or your own practice during the meditation time if you prefer. And there'll be time to rest, I promise, later on. But the morning speaks in a certain way that's really helpful for meditation and for the retreat. Any questions? Anything to say? Thank you very much for being here. I feel a different kind of smile. I feel like really tickled inside too. Share this. However many retreats I've been on, it just is. Such a privilege to be in relationship in this way, not only practicing on our own, in our own individual way, but also finding a way to bring that individual way together harmoniously, and just for the joy of that, but also the power and the beauty of that, and the challenge. Thank you.